News Radio WJPF, my friend Ken Mulligan. He is the Associate Professor of Political Science, SIU, and our guest this morning. Ken, as always, it's a privilege. I hope you're well, sir.
Good morning, Tom. Glad to be here.
All right, so I called you up to make you my victim. So are you ready for this?
I think so.
I am deeply bothered by this, and I want to share my thoughts with you. And this is not about Trump. This is not about Biden. They're just the players in the show. We have one primary, but before a caucus and one primary, but before the first primary is over, we're down to three candidates. I am so bothered by the fact that just a mere fraction of this country had any say in selecting a presidential candidate. I mean, we have an entire primary season coming up, and when I say fraction, I don't think that's intellectually dishonest.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with you about that. I mean, we have the system we have, and there's one candidate on, well, the candidates for both parties are just so far ahead. Anybody can run for president, and several people have, especially on the Republican side. They're just not nearly as popular as the former president.
So it's not about the process. It's about the players.
I sincerely think it's about the players and about the voters. There are a lot of people in both parties who don't like the eventual nominee that they're going to be stuck with, but there are a lot of people who do, or at least a critical mass enough to keep that candidate, to keep these two candidates in the race and to become the nominee.
But here's the thing. We also see statistics in both the Democrat and Republican Party about the lack of support within their own party among some sometimes substantial portions. I mean, you've got Joe Biden, where a lot of Democrats say he's unelectable, unreelectable. They wouldn't vote for him again. You've got Trump, who's lost some supporters, while others have maybe solidified, become even more stronger in their convictions. But there are polls within the groups themselves that question those people's viability as well. It's not 90%. It's not 100. I mean, I don't know where I draw the line, depending on the poll and the subject, I guess.
Yeah, well, and I agree with you about that. And so I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit here for the sake of discussion.
Well, I started playing advocate first. Why don't you do it? A turnaround's fair play.
Well, look, you're right. But even within their own parties, both of these candidates are unpopular. So the question is, why are they going to be the nominees that we are, from these people's perspective, stuck with? And one of them is president for the next 4 years. And the reason is, and let's talk, just focus on Trump for the sake of discussion, since that race has been more competitive on the Republican side, at least somewhat. The reason is that whereas Trump has a lot of detractors, even within the Republican Party, he also has a lot of strong supporters and enough to make him the nominee, whereas support among the other candidates, and now we're just down to one alternative, Nikki Haley, doesn't have nearly the support that Trump has, even within her own state. She's going to, if she stays in the race, continues to stay in the race, she is going to lose her home state, South Carolina, to Donald Trump, and not by a little. So, yes, these are both unpopular candidates, even within their own party, but even within their parties, and especially on the Republican side, there are a lot of strong supporters, and that's why Trump is going to be the nominee. On the Democratic side, it's a little more complicated, but not really, insofar as Biden is president and the sitting president gets to run for re-election almost all the time.
Right. Incumbency is an incredibly strong thing, but you just mentioned this, and I want to go a step farther. Is Joe Biden's Nikki Haley Robert F. Kennedy Jr.?
I think both he and Haley are also Rams who just happen to be in the race, waiting in the wings in case the front runner dies.
Or running for vice president in the case of the Republican Party, some might say.
I the way Trump has been attacking Haley lately, and he says he's already chosen, he already knows who his running mate is going to be, I'd be really surprised if Haley is that person. But then again, you know, with Trump, you don't really know.
Well, yeah, because look at the way, I mean, he literally went from de sanctimonious to DeSantis, I really like him and his wife, in the course of minutes.
Yeah, but you know, if you notice, look a little bit more closely at the way Trump operates, he, among former opponents, he builds them up but also tears them down at the same time. He says nasty things about them, and then he'll say something nice right after. It's kind of how he was doing that to Rick Scott a couple of days, who I think, if I were to put money on it, and I wouldn't, it will probably be his nominee, or excuse me, his vice presidential running mate.
I was wondering about that, because... you look at the demographics and Kamala Harris and the Biden administration, what do the Republicans have to offer when it comes to diversity and being able to address that? I could see that. Go ahead, Ken.
No, I was going to say, on one hand, Trump tends, my perception is he tends not to care much about that kind of thing. But on the other hand, I could see him going in that direction, and it might include Scott. That would be my guess is who he's leaning towards, or maybe Ramaswamy, who would also be a diversity candidate and would be a safe pick for Trump, at least in terms of loyalty. And the third one I would mention as a possibility would be Elise Stefanik from upstate New York, a member of Congress who made headlines recently with some congressional hearings. And she's a Trump loyalist as well.
The 14th Amendment is going to play a role in this election, yes or no? What are you thinking, Ken?
I think probably not, but it's possible. And so I think what you're probably referring to is the fact that, if I'm not mistaken, Trump has been kicked off the ballot in at least two states, Colorado and Maine.
Yeah, I think the court put a hold on that last week, but I didn't mean it's not going to happen. Just a, you know, courts back and batting issues back and forth.
Well, right. And I think what you're alluding to is the fact that the Supreme Court is going to hear this case. It's going to make a decision that will probably be definitive and effectively decide whether or not states will be able to kick them off the ballot. I would be very surprised if the U.S. Supreme Court goes along with that, which is to say that the Supreme Court allows states to kick Trump off the ballot, although it's certainly possible.
You know, I find that one aspect of the primary in New Hampshire, in my opinion, was underplayed, and that is the absence of Joe Biden on the ballot. Well, now, let me be as intellectually honest as I can. The fact that he was not on the ballot, I think, was pretty well covered, but why he wasn't on the ballot was not very well covered.
Sure. Well, and the reason he was not on the ballot was because President Trump, several months ago, maybe more than a year ago, decided to have the first Democratic primary be in South Carolina. Rationale for that was that South Carolina is more representative of Democratic voters from his point of view than New Hampshire. New Hampshire didn't like this. It's in the New Hampshire Constitution, if I'm not mistaken, that New Hampshire will have the first primary. And so New Hampshire, the Democratic Party in New Hampshire did not go along with that. They decided, well, we're going to have our primary anyway. And that means Biden is not contesting it. He's not actually on the ballot. But the funny thing, which I think you're kind of alluding to, is that at the same time that, and by the way, the New Hampshire votes don't count. So the votes in New Hampshire on the Democratic side were canceled, because New Hampshire decided to have its primary when it did. But yet, at the same time, the Biden campaign was promoting internally a write-in campaign so that Biden would nevertheless win the Democratic primary in New Hampshire, even though those votes will not count at the convention this summer.
All right. Now I'm going to throw one at you, curveball. All right, here we go. The presidential election cycle has a lot higher turnout. It drives people to the polls. I mean, you saw the numbers of our last midterm. I mean, it was a lousy turnout. And I mean, it affected, you know, it affected races because people didn't go and incumbents lost here and there. I mean, you mayors here in Southern Illinois that you didn't see coming. And I wonder what this Trump-Biden presidential ticket will have effect when it comes to turnout. And when I say turnout, I'm asking, can turnout on the local level, on the state representative who is looking at a primary challenger, because it filters through. I mean, here in Southern Illinois, Darren Bailey, Mike Bost, the one with the most MAGA vibe wins. Does the presidential election work that way? Don't worry about the turnout, so incumbents are at higher risk. I mean, what are your thoughts on the tone of the presidential election turnout and effect on the local level?
That's a really great question, and I don't have a slam dunk definitive answer by any means. But let me ask you a first clarifying question. Are you talking about turnout for the primaries or for the general election?
Actually, I was thinking about the primaries, but now I'm glad you didn't differentiate. But I was thinking about the primaries, to be honest with you. I mean, because it puts, you know, and the reason why I picked MAGA and Bost is they both want to use the president and have him on their shoulder of saying, I'm with Trump. I mean, that's what they want. I was in southeastern Illinois, and I stopped a lot of places and talked to a lot of people. And I'm telling you what, you want to see a bunch of people in support of Donald Trump, and anybody supports Donald Trump. It's not just southeastern Illinois has that, but I just saw with a bit more fervor that association means a lot to the potential southern Illinois voter, and doesn't matter whether you're running for state's attorney or state rep.
That's a great point and a good question. I would say that both presidential candidates being more unpopular overall within their own party than most presidential candidates, that would seem to suggest that it could depress turnout, because why would somebody want to come out and vote if the candidates are not popular and if we already know who the nominees are going to be? And we do. Why come out and vote in an election that doesn't matter? So there's that. However, the other side, which you're just mentioning, is that especially on the Republican side, or at least that's what you're mentioning, there's strong support for Trump, and that could drive up turnout where people want to come out and sort of make a statement with their vote. Turnout also, I'll mention lastly, has been increasing generally in recent years. I mean, 30 years ago, we were worried about democracy because nobody was voting, but turnout has been going up generally, which most people think is a good idea or good for democracy, and I would agree with that. So higher turnout would seem to suggest, yes, more support for down-ballot candidates who are in the Trump mold.
Presidents, Americans like underdogs. Still true about presidential candidates?
I'm not convinced it ever was, to be honest.
We know we like underdogs in a lot of different cases, but when it comes where Americans really like winners more than they like anything. Did you see the Harvard-Harris poll about the top policy concerns of U.S. voters?
No, I did not.
35% immigration, 32% inflation, economy and jobs 25%, crime and drugs 16%, deficit and national security both came in at 14%, and corruption at 13%. You know what's conspicuous in its absence is immigration is there, but there's a lot of things here. Abortion, right? I kind of thought maybe that might show up. It didn't.
Yes, I've seen other polls that are very similar to what you just suggested. And immigration being the top concern, that's extremely unusual. Almost always it's the economy. So anything other than the economy being the biggest concern means it's a big deal in American politics. Abortion, yes, it's been an unusually important issue. That issue has been around forever, but it's become more important recently since the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade. And all of the momentum has been on the pro-choice side nationally, such that it's been on the ballot in several cases, and the pro-choice side has won every single one of those. And so President Biden is running on that. Trump has already started backing away from it. It's a politically, it's a loser for Republicans right now. And if you were to look at the how important that issue is among Democrats and Republicans, Democrats see it as being a much more important issue today than Republicans do. But that's because Republicans kind of perceive, on average, that they won that battle.
You've seen some other polling on this, Ken, on the issue of voter integrity. There's some pretty disturbing numbers of percentages of people, you know, 30, 40%, 20% who don't believe we have an honest voting process in the United States of America anymore. That's another troubling number, not presidential election, troubling as a nation. As, you know, as an idealist, everybody go out and vote. I mean, I get that. But now people, substantial portion statistically, don't have any faith in the process.
Yes. Whenever people think that the system is broken or corrupt, that's a potential problem. And I agree with you 100%. I don't agree with that sentiment. I don't think the process is that problematic. If anything, in recent years, you know, go back to 2000, remember that presidential election and how ridiculous that got.
Yep.
Not from corruption, but just because it was such an incredibly close election, it revealed some of the problems that have always been there with respect to voting machines and counting the votes and what have you. Elections have improved substantially since then, but to the extent that people are losing faith, a big part of that, of course, is driven by Donald Trump, and because he has worked pretty hard to stoke some of those fears.
But on the same time, I can go out on the internet and find pictures of people taking a 6-inch stack of ballots and putting them in a ballot box too.
Yeah, you know, conspiracy theories. I mean, there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there, and sometimes you will hear stories. Sometimes they're true, sometimes they're not. And even when they are true, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's fraud or that it's systematic. The kind of thing I'm referring to here, and this goes back easily to 2000 and before, that elections have traditionally been run by volunteers. You know, when you go and vote, it's usually old retired people who are running the show. Sometimes they make mistakes. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that there's no corruption in elections, but I am saying that it's, to the extent that there is some, it's not a reason to distrust our elections generally.
I'm sending more and more in my personal tendencies that what drives me to the polls very often, because Illinois being Illinois, I mean, what it's going to be, I've been upset about the primary and our position there being the third largest state and being buried so deep in the primaries that by the time it gets to us, I mean, everybody's probably feeling that way after New Hampshire now. Where's my time at the poll? Where's my... I pay a lot of money for that chance for me to go to the ballot box, and I want it to be worth every dollar, you know what I mean? That type of motivation. But local elections is what drives me so often now to go to the polls, because there's people on that ballot and I want my say.
Sure, and that's a really legitimate reason to vote. And it's those elections that most people don't pay much attention to, which impact our lives more than, say, you know, it's not that it doesn't matter who's the president, but it matters a lot more who is the governor, who are your state representatives, and other local officials that impact our lives on a more local level.
It's interesting. One of our listeners just texted me. He says, you know, you should have to put a little effort in to vote. You shouldn't be able to do it while you're sleeping. And I get what they're saying when they text in this morning on that. Because, yeah, I mean, that's one of the huge reasons why you and I are talking today. So we hope our listeners and the people listen along every day are learning more so they can put the most effort and the best choices for what they want. News Radio WJPF. Ken, anything on your mind quickly before I let you go when it comes to this? Anything that you would want to point out to us you think is significant, especially over the last week?
No, not to be honest, not really. Everything is playing out sort of as expected. I don't know. Part of that might be good and might be bad.
Yeah. That's why I'm upset. It was predicted and everybody was right. But like I said, I still think that, you know, the American people haven't had their say, and we pay a lot for that say. Ken, I really appreciate your time. You know, as time goes by, I'm looking forward to joining us more through this election season for some insight, man. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Tom.
Ken Mulligan, associate professor, political science, SIU.